This opportunity, and I don't want to ever minimize that and not mention that. My family, my mother, father, and sister and I, we attended the Oak Grove Church, Oak Street Church, and then as it became Highland Drive, then we attended there. Now, recently, Highland Drive had their 100th year anniversary, and many of you probably maybe heard about that, and they invited me to come back and speak, and I found out why. I was the oldest guy that was living that could tell them about those early years. And I didn't find it out till a little bit later on, but I was glad to go back and speak to them. I had vivid memories of the 50s and 60s as I was growing up. Now, another part of my history is, yes, that's where my mother, father, and sister attended, but I attended here a whole lot as well, because my grandparents attended here. Sam and Frances Hoppe were my grandparents. They were members here from at least during the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And I remember being here at this building a lot. I would work my grandparents' place was right down Township Line on the left-hand side. They had a farm, and I would come out during the summers when I was a youth, probably 13, 14, 15, maybe even younger. I would come out and I'd spend all week long with my grandmother and grandfather and work on that farm, so that meant that I was here on Wednesday nights and was here on many Sunday nights. The first song that I ever got to lead as a young Christian was right down there, right here in this, I guess this is the original building, so it would have been just right down there. So fond memories. And at one time, most everyone in this congregation was related to me. Now, it's not that, as I looked at the audience this morning, it's not that way, but I do have a few people that are still related to me there, but they might not want to admit it this morning, but would hope that they would. I'm so thankful and so grateful for the Green Forest congregation. As I mentioned earlier, a leading congregation of the support. This is a wonderful thing that you do for Crowley's Ridge College by doing this CRC Day today and by letting your contribution go to the work at Crowley's Ridge College. Those of you that were in the class period noted many of the things that we need to be accomplishing and need to be doing and the way that we're funded. And we call on our Christian friends and our Christian brethren throughout our fellowship to be able to continue on the good work of Crowley's Ridge College. The Green Forest congregation is often spoken about on our campus as a leading congregation of support for the college. And we appreciate that and we recognize that as well. One story that I want to tell you as I start this morning is I came up early and I laid my Bible and my notes on the podium here, and something kind of strange happened to me a couple of years ago. I was filling in on a Sunday morning at the congregation where I now attend, which is the Hillcrest congregation right next to the college campus, and I was filling in for Gary Cremines that morning. He was gone, and I had taken my Bible and my notes and I'd done like I did this morning and brought them to the pulpit earlier and laid them here. Well, somebody in the congregation thought it would be real fun if they would pick my Bible and my notes up and go hide them. So when I got up to speak that morning, I'm looking. There's no Bible. There's no notes. And so, boy, did I fool them. I just went ahead and let in, and I think I kept them there an hour that morning, you know, because I didn't have my notes. And didn't have. So with Dennis up here a little earlier, I was a little worried. I was a little worried that the notes and the Bible might disappear, but we didn't, and I'm glad for that this morning. I'm not going to try to keep you long this morning, but I want to try to mention a subject that I would have general agreement with everyone in this congregation on this morning. And the subject we're talking about, as you can see on the screen, is doing good, who, what, when, and where of that. If I, as a general statement, mentioned this morning, does everyone believe we ought to do good? Everyone would be in general agreement with that. We want to take a little closer look this morning and maybe look at some things that could have a little additional meaning for us this morning and maybe help us. There's two stories that I want to tell you as I begin this morning. And these are stories that I've told before from time to time. I don't think that I've told these here, but if I have, then you get to hear them again, as is often said. But a few years ago, back in 2005, we were privileged to have Truett Cathy, who is the owner and the founder of Chick-fil-A restaurants. We were privileged to have him on our campus for a major scholarship fundraiser. And I will tell you that that particular scholarship fundraiser was the second best one that we ever had. Now, the first best one we ever had was the Mike Matheny last year. So that was our best. But Trick Cathy's was the second best that we ever had, with a lot of people really interested in attending that night. In 2005, we were privileged. He was in his 80s at that time. Now, he has now passed away. He passed away at the age of 93 in 2014. But there are now over 2,000 Chick-fil-A restaurants. And one of the things that's particular about them, among all of our other fast food restaurants, is they are never open on Sunday. Since the business started in 1946, they have never been open on a Sunday, a Christmas, or a Thanksgiving. They want those days to be saved for their family. Now, Mr. Cathy himself was a very religious person. He was very interested in doing right and in doing good, and he spent a lifetime doing that and tried to encourage those around him in every way that he possibly could. The Chick-fil-A corporate purpose statement says, now this is for their company, their corporate purpose statement says, their purpose is to glorify God by being a faithful steward of all that is entrusted to us and to have a positive influence on all who come in contact with Chick-fil-A. Well, that's pretty substantial for a company to have that kind of statement, where they are very interested in being a faithful steward of what has been entrusted to them, and want everyone that comes in Chick-fil-A, in contact with Chick-fil-A, to have the right positive influence upon them. That sounds like a company that I'd like to do business with, and I do when I have that opportunity. But Mr. Cathy, as he came to campus that day, showed up about 4 hours ahead of the presentation. And I thought, well, what in the world are we going to do for 4 hours? Well, he sat in my office, and it was the most wonderful conversation that I think that I have ever had, among the best that I've certainly ever had. As I was getting to experience from him his stories and us telling about his business and about his life and the things that I knew, I could just tell that he indeed was a very generous person. One of his business associates that did a lot of business with him, but from another company, stated about Mr. Cathy that he was consistently generous and always looking for someone else to help. Always looking for someone else to help. Mr. Cathy was known as one of the greatest philanthropists that we have had in recent years in the United States. But in addition to just being in a position to be able to give a lot of resources to different works, he also was very interested in children. And he was interested in children especially who had been abandoned. And matter of fact, he served as a foster parent for over 120 children. And he met all their financial needs during this time. In addition to that, he provided summer camps, and over 21,000 children have participated in his free summer camps. And he's given college scholarships to over 16,000 students. So Mr. Cathy was indeed very interested in people, but he was especially interested in young people. But he was not only interested in taking care of young people's financial needs, he was very interested in taking care of their spiritual growth and trying to head them in the right direction. And as you can imagine, as a lot of the foster children would come his way, a lot of them needed very special attention. As we were sitting in my office that particular afternoon back in 2005, the subject came up. He asked me about my background, and I made the mistake of telling him that I had one time been a car dealer. And so it wasn't a mistake, but I told him that I'd one time been a car dealer. And he immediately told me, he said, of my 120 foster children, he said, I have bought 100 cars. He said, I have bought a car for every one of those foster children as they have become old enough and as they have seemed responsible enough and as they have seemed like they were heading in the right direction, I purchased a car for them. And I said, well, I sure would have liked for you to have been my customer. You know, I would have liked that very much. But the story that he wanted to tell me from that point forward is a very interesting story. He says that one of his young foster children, he said his foster kids knew that when they went to college, that when they got a little older and they were doing right, they knew they would most likely be the recipient of a vehicle. And they were all very concerned, you know, about that. And he was telling the story of one particular young man that he thought wasn't headed in the right direction. And so it was about time for him to get a vehicle. And so the young man came to him and said, you know, I see that you have bought some of the other kids' cars. You know, will I be able to have a car? And he said, well, maybe. He said, maybe. He said, I've got a book that I want you to read. And the book that he gave him to read was a small book, about 100 pages, on spiritual values and heading your life in the direction and those sorts of things, things that would be good for the young man to know. And he asked the young man to read the book and then come back and talk to him. Well, a few months went by, and the young man had communication with him, and he said, "What about my car?" And he said, "Well, have you had a chance to read that book?" And so this went on for a couple of years. As the young man was growing and maturing, he kept asking them if he had had time to read that book. Well, as the story goes, as Mr. Cathy told me himself, that when, after a while, the young foster child got old enough and he went ahead and just moved on off. But he never did buy him a car. But he had instructions on the last page of that book as to how to go pick up his new car. But the young man had never read the book to know the instructions on how to pick up the new car. So if someone tells you to read something, you know, it might be very interesting, you know, for you to do that. But not only was he concerned about their financial needs, but he was concerned about their spiritual needs as well. One of the greatest people that I've ever known that believed certainly in doing well and doing good to those that he could. Another picture that I've got here is Cecilia Stoll. Cecilia Stoll is a CRC alumnus. She was a student of ours in 1982 to 83. She was from São Paulo, Brazil. She made all the way to the CRC campus from São Paulo, Brazil. And the reason for that is there was a family that was living in the Paragould area that received foreign exchange students. And she was a foreign exchange student. She came to live with the family, came to Crowley's Ridge College because it was local, and she had come for that particular their purpose. Well, after Cecilia graduated from CRC in 83, she went on to Oklahoma Christian University, and she graduated there. But in 1991, she came in contact with the Arbonne Cosmetic Company. That's a company that does a lot of marketing of women's beauty products. And she became so successful with them that after 6 years, she was appointed their Executive National Vice President, and that she has kept that title for the last 26 years. Well, we invited Cecilia to come back to speak at our graduation in May of this year. And she did a wonderful presentation to our students. But the story that she told them that all the students remembered was the $200 story. And this was her story as to why the question was asked of her is why she had all this drive and this determination. And she was also known for being a philanthropist and for giving away a lot of money and for helping people. She's been known for that. And the question asked of her was why that happened. And she said that when she was a student at Crowley's Ridge College, and she actually attended church at the Gainesville Church of Christ in Paragould, and she said that while she was there on one Sunday, after she became familiar with the congregation, the congregation knew her, that one of the members of the congregation came up to her and gave her $200 and said, "I know that you're here, I know that you could use money, and here I want to give you $200. So she received the $200, and she says that day, she made the determination in her heart that she wanted to put herself in position to give somebody $200. To her, that was such a tremendous big deal that someone out of the generosity, just to do good, helped her with $200. And she says that spurned her on, and she actually has a gift of $200 that she gives to a lot of people that she comes in contact with. Well, this is a very familiar verse that we're going to take a look at this morning that we've looked at before for a number of times. It says, "Let us not become weary in doing good, for at a proper time we'll reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers." Now, what I'm going to talk about this morning is just a lot of reinforcement about what we already know, and that is the fact that we should do good in our life as we have opportunity. The first part of this verse deals with "let us not become weary." When we mention the words "do not become weary," we always think of, well, why would we possibly become weary in doing something that is good, which is really talked about in this verse here. But the worst enemy of enthusiasm, if we have enthusiasm to do something, is time. As time passes by and we become weary, lots of times, of whatever it is that we're doing. You know, if we go on vacation and we have a wonderful day or two of vacation, lots of times that third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh day is not as exciting as that first or second or third day was. Lots of times if we if a man would get a new shotgun, he's real excited with that shotgun at first, but it may not become quite as exciting as time goes by. Time is the kind of the killer of enthusiasm. When you take a look at responsibilities and jobs and things that we can do, even connected to the church, lots of times we become weary in doing those things because of the passage of time as it comes by. Christians get tired and lots of times lose their interest in doing good, but it shouldn't be that way. The idea that's described here is meant to encourage us to carry on, even though we might have those thoughts of becoming weary within our mind. We shouldn't grow weary of demonstrating our peace and our joy and all kinds of act of love to our neighbors. Christians and those who come in contact with on a daily basis. In short, we shouldn't lose heart in doing what we know that we should be doing. But it happens. We as Christians are not only believers, but we are also behaviors. Okay? So we're not only believers, but we're also behaviors. We behave in a particular way. James puts it this way. He says, "Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. We are not only called to faith, but we are also called to do the will of God and the work of God." So Paul in this verse here speaks to us not only about our calling to do good, but also about the danger of becoming weary in doing that. What does Paul have in mind here? Well, sometimes Christians develop a weariness of mind and heart and suffer a loss of excitement and challenge. But the words are mentioned to us that we should just continue on, that we should not become weary in doing that. Sometimes Christians are tempted to quit doing good because it seems that no good at all is being accomplished. Lots of times you can be helping someone, and it just seems that no good can come out of it at all. But lots of times we will learn later that it does. Some Christians just get turned off of doing good because they think they're being taken advantage of. And we would like to see a verse possibly that says something like, "Do not grow weary in doing well, and if you're taken advantage of, you don't ever have to help anybody again." But we don't have such a verse. We have a verse that encourages us to continue on and to not grow weary in doing those things that we should be doing. We need to look at this as an opportunity, that doing good is a privilege of being a Christian, and move forward from that. Recently, I was doing some reading and I saw this particular quote, and it said, "The good you do today will sometimes be forgotten tomorrow." Well, that's true. The good that we do today sometimes will be forgotten tomorrow. But that doesn't change anything for us. As the Christian, we continue on doing the good, even though we realize there's that possibility that it might be forgotten in the future. But I've got a couple of stories that I want to tell you that challenges that idea. I believe lots of times that the good that we can do is often remembered far into the future. During my years that I was in business, I can remember one particular instance where I was at a grocery store one afternoon, and I was behind a young man that was going through the aisle and checking out a box of diapers that he had. That was the only purchase that he had. He had a box of diapers, but he didn't have enough money for the box of diapers. And so I was behind him in line, so I don't know, it was just a few dollars. So I just went ahead and laid a few dollars down for him, and he walked on kind of to the end of the counter, and then I kind of walked on, and he told me that he really appreciated that. And that's really all that was said. Well, as I mentioned, I was in business at this time, so I think he kind of knew who I was because he looked me up a few days later, this very same young man. He came by my business. When he came by my business, he looked differently than he had looked when he was buying those diapers. When he was buying those diapers, he just didn't look like he was in very good shape at all. And I mean, he was kind of dirty and kind of nasty and all those, you know, sorts of things. But he needed help buying these diapers, so I helped him. When he stopped by the car lot, he was dressed very appropriately. He was clean. His hair was slicked down, you know. And I thought, well, I didn't recognize him. He had to tell me who he was, that he was the young man who I'd helped buy diapers a few days ahead of time. He told me that he really appreciated that, but that it made him go home and think a little bit, because he mentioned he was back to buy the diapers because he had forgotten to buy the diapers when he had come to the grocery store earlier when he bought his beer. And that he had enough money to buy his beer, but he didn't have enough money to buy the diapers for his child. And he said that really caused him pause. It caused him to stop and to think about priorities and those sorts of things. So he came by and mentioned that. So that a good thing that was done wasn't forgotten by someone. They remembered it. Another story that I want to tell you briefly is a story about a young lady that stopped by my office just a few years ago. And she came in and she made a considerable contribution to us. And when she came by, she sat down, she wrote the check, she sat in my office, and she said, "You don't remember me, do you?" And I said, "No, I sure don't." And then she reminded me who she was, and when she mentioned her name, I knew immediately who she was. About 30 years earlier, at the Hillcrest Church of Christ, there was a young lady that came our way because she had been disowned by her family because she was going to have a child and she wasn't married. And our congregation had taken her in, had provided for her, and had really helped her through very difficult years. Well, this is 30 years later, and she had had quite success in her life. She was actually a pharmacist, and she had produced and written a program that was bought by a major drug company, and so she had wealth. And she stopped by and visited at CRC, and she gave me this check. And she said, "But I want to make sure that I stop by and I visit with the congregation while I'm there." So the congregation did something good for this young lady, and 30 years later, you know, it was remembered. So sometimes those things are remembered, and sometimes they are not. But that doesn't detract us. We continue to do good as we know that we should. The theme here then goes to, for at a proper time, we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Now, this is a relates to a farming enterprise. At the proper time, we'll reap a harvest if we do not give up. If anyone knows not what giving up means, it's a farmer. And I don't know if we have any farmers in here today, but there's a lot of frustration that goes to farmers. You have to be concerned about the weather. You have to be concerned about water. You have to be concerned about sunlight. You have to be worried about flooding and about all the things that goes into farming. And it seems like the work is never done. And so that you're always needing to do something and just to move forward. But you know, if you do the things that you need to do and you don't give up, then lots of times there'll be a harvest at the end of that. Now, the only farming that I've ever done in my life is down on this, at my grandfather's farm, right down on Township Line. And he had 15 acres of tomatoes. 15 acres of tomatoes that he sold commercially. And he believed that the only help in the world should be me. That was the only help in the world. So you know what happened to us around July the 4th. You know, around July the 4th, when tomatoes start coming off, we have all these tomatoes, and it's day after day after day from sun up until sundown. So I learned a lot about farming during those days. I learned enough that I wanted to do something else beside farm during those times, of which I did. But that taught me some valuable lessons. It taught me that you do not give up when there is a task out there in front of you. Jesus also talks about this in the Sermon on the Mount. He talks to us there about storing up treasures. And there's no doubt that when we do some good, that even though we're not looking for the treasure that's being stored up, there's no doubt possibly a treasure that's being stored up for us. The last part of this verse says, "Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially those that belong to the family of believers." It's also clear from this text to whom God expects us to do good. It mentions, "As we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers." We're to do good to all people, but it starts with our fellow Christians. It makes no sense to do good in the world if we do not first do good to our Christian brothers and sisters. It makes no sense to help someone who is an unbeliever if we ignore our own family. It's clear from the Bible that God expects all of His people to be involved in doing good. Don't forget that in this text He is speaking to the churches in Galatia. This means that He's writing to men, He's writing to women, He's writing to children, to followers, and to teachers, and to all sorts of individuals. So it seems as if we are taught that we should do good to everyone that we can. But what is the good that we are called to do? Throughout the Bible, both in the Old Testament and the New Testament, God tells us what He expects of us. In Deuteronomy 15 and Isaiah 58, we're told to watch out for and be especially generous to those who are poor in need of clothing or shelter. In Matthew 35, we have the Lord's own words, the very familiar words, "For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me." We all know that we're expected to do good, and we know that we're especially to watch out for those and be generous to those that are poor or in a special need. Good deeds are not only limited to just money that we're giving out or to acts of charity. It's also involved in a number of other things that you can do as well. Even in work of the church, there are many things that you can do. As you're looking at the idea of being generous and trying to do good, is there time that you can spend in helping at the church, in teaching, in doing the ministry of the church? Being involved in those sorts of things good are also following Jesus' example as we've tried to follow Jesus' example in all that we do. But what happens when we do good? A few verses here that we'll read very, very briefly tells us, "In the same way, let your light so shine that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of wrongdoing, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day He visits. For it's God's will that by doing good you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish men. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting anything back. And do not forget to do good and to share with others, for with such sacrifices God is pleased." How often are we to do good works? Let me read a part of Galatians 6:10 from another translation, and it says, "As occasion and opportunity arise, let us do good to all people." As occasion and opportunity arise. This means that whenever we have the opportunity, we should be doing good to others so that we can be a blessing to them. In June of 1955, Winston Churchill was invited to a college in Britain to give a commencement address. He was in a poor state of health toward the end of his life. He was in a weakened condition, and he was able, after several minutes, to make his way from a chair up to the podium where he was supposed to speak. In his weakened condition, his commencement address was 6 words long. And that address was, never quit. So maybe that should be our theme that we should use as we move forward, as we think about doing good to all. As we read this morning a little earlier from Acts 2, 42 through 47, we know what the picture of the first century church was like from here in Acts. And we know that is mentioned in these verses here, that they studied, they were concerned about the fellowship, they ate together, they enjoyed being together, they witnessed miracles, and they took care of the needs of the fellowship and others. And in verse 45 particularly, it says, "They gave to anyone as he had need. They also praised God and enjoyed the favor of all people in doing that." So everyone should have a story. We should be able to have a story of some way, something that we know about where good was accomplished. The story can be that of a congregation. I'm confident the Green Forest congregation has story after story after story of the good things that they've done. The Hillcrest congregation, where I attend, has story after story after story of doing good. Well, these stories need to continue. One of the things that the Hillcrest congregation has been blessed is, over a decade ago, we wanted every member of our congregation to have the opportunity to do good if he wanted to do good without the burden of a financial difficulty. Lots of times people would tell us that they wanted to do good, that they wanted to help someone, but they didn't have the money to do that. So what our congregation did over a decade ago was say, okay, any member of the congregation, if you see a need out there, you take care of that need up to $100 and then come and get the money out of the church treasury. Well, let me tell you what's happened to us over the last decade. We believe our congregation has become a very caring congregation. And we believe have cared for people's neighbors and for people they've come in contact with, and even strangers that they've come in contact with in hospital waiting rooms and other things, to the tune of about $200,000 that our members have given away over the last 10 years. And we're dedicated to make that program continue. So everyone should have a story. Our congregations have stories, but we too should have individual stories. Now, not for the idea of being able to brag or to boast, but we should have a story about doing good when we knew that help was really needed. I've got a story that I want to tell you. I've told you four or five stories this morning, but I've got one more story that I want to tell you. And this is a story that I could have told you last year when I spoke to you. In June of last year, I was here, and I spoke about visiting the story of the Good Samaritan. And we talked about that somewhat during our Bible time last June. But I couldn't tell you the story last year. It fit last year, but it also fits this year as well. But it was because of the visiting couple that I had with me here last year when I spoke. Some of you remember that we had some very good friends of mine and Linda's here with us last year as we spoke. The story that I want to tell you about is our friends that were here with us at this time last year. We traveled together in the summer. And last year when I was here in June, we were on our way to Wyoming at that particular time. And they had come to visit the service here and be with us in that. But 14 years earlier, they had one son, and they tragically lost him in a farming accident at Corning. And these are our very best friends that we have. But at Eric's funeral, a man came up and told his parents a story that they had no idea that this had occurred. And it was a story of a gentleman there in Corning who was struggling one day, an elderly gentleman. He was out in his yard and he'd had a water line difficulty, and he was out in his yard with a shovel trying to dig out a water line. And Eric, 21 years old, was going down the road and he saw the young man struggling over there. So he had a shovel in his truck, and so he stopped and he helped the elderly man repair the water line and stayed with him for several hours. As we were there at the funeral, that elderly man came to the parents and was telling the story. That did they have any idea what that meant for him? A simple act of kindness that a 21-year-old would stop and to help an elderly man dig a water line and stay with him for a few hours. So we never know of the good things that we do, what kind of an impact that they will have on everyone. But everyone should have a story. And so as we conclude this morning, we're going to ask what your story is. What is your story? What is your story of doing good and being able to help and being that mindset and that position to be able to do it? We have not said anything this morning that's a new thought at all. What we're doing this morning is just reconfirming to you and confirming over to you that it's good. It's good for us to be in the position to where we can help people and where we can show Christ by always being willing to do good to everyone we come in contact with. This morning, this congregation sets aside a time that they're going to sing an invitation song, and if there is a need that you have to come before the congregation this morning, the elders, ministers here will be glad to assist you. So let's stand together as we sing that song.